Hello and welcome to Shades and Layers with Kutlwano Skhosana Richie. My guest today is Leslie Robeson, who is the CEO and founder of the Black Beauty Collective, a new concept store for Black-owned beauty brands in Hyde Park, Chicago. The idea to create Black Beauty Collective was planted 10 years ago and quickly became a project that was dear to Leslie's heart. The growing ownership and access disparities within the beauty industry posed a deep concern for her. For example, despite spending 9 times more than any other beauty product consumers, Black ownership in the space only accounts for 2.5%. So creating a collective to ensure broader impact is Leslie's solution to this deep-rooted issue. In today's conversation, Leslie takes us on a journey of how the idea came to her in the first place, how she's gone about recruiting the founders who will be the tenants of her flagship store, her business model, and her vision for the collective. Leslie has a corporate career in talent acquisition. This is her second venture into entrepreneurship, and she's also a U.S. military veteran. She will tell us how she's leveraging all these aspects of her background to make the collective a success. Starting with how she describes what she does, here's Leslie Robeson now.
I'm a lot of things, and I always say, like, it's okay to show up and be many things. Like,
yeah. Well,
I've for years attached it to all the things that I did. And I'm a mom and I'm a veteran and I was a wife and now I'm an ex-wife. And now I'm all these different things. But really, my true who am I? I'm a visionary. I'm a thought leader. Mm-hmm. I'm a thought partner. I'm a person that inspires others. And I push them. Someone said this to me a couple of weeks ago, that I have a task. God gave me an assignment when I was born on my life. Mm-hmm. Someone said this to me and I thought a lot about it because it's true. And it, because I've shown up, even as a kid, I would always go, if someone was feeling down about something or indecisive or whatever, and I would always have this message, like, you're more than enough. Like, whatever you think is fine.
Wow.
Like, you're even as a kid, and it's the weirdest thing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what I was doing. But I was speaking life into the broken and I don't know. And the lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. I've always been that human, even when I have like my worst days and I don't want to be bothered with anybody. Someone calls me and I'm like, oh, no, you're amazing. I need you to know that. Walk out of this conversation knowing that God created you like he wanted you to be. And everything you do is exactly what he designed. And it's so genuine and authentic and it doesn't feel draining. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. And it's ironic that I ended up, I guess not really, right? I ended up in this space where I'm helping all these Black women entrepreneurs because I literally get firsthand to say, you're doing great. You're doing amazing. Keep going. You got it. You're winning. I already see it. And mm-hmm. so this is the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because even before this, I mean, I have a whole corporate career behind me. And
yeah. In recruitment, of course.
Talent acquisition.
Yeah.
What made me different from the other recruiters, and I'll tell you, I got into that happenstance because I went to school for HR and I kind of bumped around for some years trying to figure out what part or function of HR was I going to land. And I said, well, I'm going to try my hand at recruiting because I talk to people. I do that well. And I ended up getting hired into a company as a recruiter, but as a recruiting supervisor. Even though I didn't have recruiting experience, I sold these people on this recruiting experience that I had. And they were like, okay, come on. And I failed at it miserably the first couple months because I was showing up in a capacity in which I thought you were supposed to show up as a manager.
Right.
But then when I decided I was just going to show up as myself, I became like one of the best recruiters and leaders that they had on the entire team.
Oh, wonderful.
But what made me different is the intentionality that I had when it came to inspiring people.
Mm-hmm.
If I can take that background, right? And then I do modeling. So people pay me to be the face of their businesses anyway. If I can take these things and couple it, and then with my entrepreneur background and use it to help drive success for other entrepreneurs,
then
I think
just
it's
do it. Yeah. So you see the best in others, and this has inspired you to launch something called the Black Beauty Collective. Tell me a little bit more about that and how you sat down and came up with this idea and why it made sense to you.
I wish I was so not complicated like that.
There's a story. Good.
So yes, the Black Beauty Collective is a hair and beauty retail store, and we feature exclusively Black-owned brands. Mm-hmm. Has to be 51% Black-owned in order to be able to participate, because I think it's important for the minority to have majority rights in the business in order to be able to be in the Black Beauty Collective. I decided that's what it is.
Yep.
So ironically enough, I was thinking about what did I want my next project to be? I'm a project person. That's the way my brain works. I wrote this as a business vision statement probably like 10 years ago. I take complex problems and break them down into actionable steps. That is who I am. So I am, my brain works like a project. Everything is a project. Mm-hmm. What can I do to help? And so I was thinking about, so I've been an entrepreneur for several years alongside with my corporate career. I decided I was going to start up another project. And I'm like, and so someone threw out, you should open up a hair and beauty store. Because in this area where in Hyde Park, where we're, our flagship store is, there are no hair and beauty stores. There's salons, but there's just not a hair and beauty supply store. And I thought to myself, I would never, because it, I don't know how it is where you live, but the hair and beauty supply stores in our community has stuff everywhere. They're huge, big box. It's not a shopping.
Yeah. No structure.
No structure. It's just there. And I thought to myself, I would never open up one of those because I'm far too classy and fabulous for that. But as I kind of thought about it, I'm like, I guess there really is a need in this community and I can make it elegant. It could feel like a shopping experience. I could create a different expectation for diverse shoppers because we kind of have accepted this big box scenario. I can create a different level of excellence when it comes to this. And I went out into the market to go and look at like small box size to do some market research. I just went down the area that had a lot of hair beauty supply, and I went into one and they're raving. I'm talking to the store manager and she's telling me all about the different products and they're all women owned and da da da. And she has this box and the box is about this big. And she goes, all the entrepreneurs in this box are Black women.
A notebook sized box?
It was about this big.
Wow.
And it was like, the ones that you could, you went all Black products. And she was so proud. We identified the top Black brands and we put them all in this box. Mm. And I remember walking out of the store. I was with my partner and we walked out and I go, they got all the Black products in one box.
Yep.
All these products in this whole store is one box full of Black owned brands. And I go, I'm going to make the whole store for Black entrepreneurs. This is it. That is what I'm doing with this story. So that is how the idea was born. Out of like, excuse me, you know, out of that voice.
Yes.
And so, but as I started, I got through the process. I set everything up and then I opened up my calendars for entrepreneurs. And I put a post up on Instagram, Facebook. Hey, this is a picture of the store. I'm looking for Black entrepreneurs in hair and beauty space. Let's chat. And I put up a link for them to grab time on my calendar. Within like a week, my schedule was booked for the next 2 months.
Amazing.
From 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. at night, every day.
Wow.
Literally, I got on every single call. I talked to every single entrepreneur. I chatted with them through it. I talked about where were the gaps?
Yeah.
What
were
they missing? What kind of support do you need? All across the United States, some out of the UK, some out of South Africa, some in other countries. And it was, and it was the same story over and over and over again. Lack of funding, lack of marketing, lack of support. I'm a solopreneur. But the thing that was probably most inspiring is that every almost 90%, 99% of the entrepreneurs I spoke with, they weren't saying, oh, I'm creating this because I just want to make some money. They were creating these products because my mother had cancer and her hair fell out and I was trying to help her grow it back. My son had eczema and I didn't want to give him the harsh drugs because he was so small. So I created this product to support that. Or I'm doing this because my girlfriend, or I'm doing this because my body was turning on me. Literally every entrepreneur I was talking to was creating something because they found a necessity in their immediate space. And then they offered it to friends and family and it became a business. And so I thought to myself, like, wouldn't it be amazing to walk into a space where 99% of the folks created products with somebody that they love in mind?
Yeah.
Like literally, not mm-hmm. for any other reason, just because I love somebody, I'm doing this and I'm going to share it with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's and it has an impact on, you know, beyond just their immediate circle now. It, you know, there are people who make the products, the raw materials, et cetera. So it has a broader impact.
Brands out of different countries who's like, got my aunt's at home, they do the shade, they ship it over, I turn it into this and I'm selling it. Things like, I mean, amazing stories. Yeah. I got entrepreneurs who have not-for-profits. Has one entrepreneur, Bricks, it's like a lip care line, lipstick line. She has a not-for-profit in Ghana. She sent 4 girls to college already.
Oh, wow. Like, amazing.
She's been over 2 years. I'm like listening to these things and I'm just like, yeah, so dope.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So you've had a positive response. So when you launch on April 6th, how many brands are going to be in store? And, you know, what can people find in terms of range of products?
Yes. So in store, in the brick and mortar, there'll be about 45 brands. Ooh. There'll be more online because we have limited space in the first brick and mortar. The second store will be bigger. We'll have more brands in the second store, but we have a retail store physically and e-com. There'll be tons more online because once we're full in the brick and mortar, they'll be asked to start online and then they can expand it to brick and mortar later. But there's an entire array of products, everything you can think of, from skincare and hair care and oils and all sorts of shades, and any product you can think of pretty much is represented in this space. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when you think of like not just hair, not just beauty, even the wellness component. So you have like journals and you have even like Black owned greeting card companies, like
right.
mind blown. And so everything you can think of is in this space. I have the most amazing folks in this space.
That's amazing. So who's going to be on the shop floor? Like how many people are you going to have in store? And, you know, because there's, a lot of choices, you know, who's going to guide us through that experience?
So I'm bringing on beauty advisors, which is really important to know that we're creating a space that is inclusive of the Black shopper. Because we know we go into so many places where you really can't ask anyone questions because they don't know anything about 4C hair. They don't know just because we got melanin skin that might be different, right? And so this sales team that I'm bringing on are beauty advisors, the sales associates, all of them, in order to work here, you have to be either a cosmetologist, an esthetician, an MUA. You have to be in the beauty space, work for a company in this space. You have to come from the hair or beauty space where you understand different textures of hair and different types of skin to actually be able to help customers and just to answer baseline questions. So that's number one. Number two, all of the entrepreneurs that are joining a collective in the retail store will actually train our sales team on how they sell their products. So when you're talking about ingredients and benefits and things of that nature, our sales team will be knowledgeable because they will be directly taught by the entrepreneur on how to talk about these products. And worst case scenario, if you ask a question that's beyond our knowledge base, right? We have a QR code right next to the products where you can just grab a QR code, it'll take you right to the owner of the company's inbox. So you can just ask them the question. And so like we're creating a space where customer service feels different and accessibility to the owner of the company just feels different. Yeah. And it creates a positive experience for the consumer so that they're not feeling like they're not heard or seen and they feel valued.
Very nice. I love it. And in order to get it to where it is now, how did you go about searching for the funding? What did that fundraising look like? Tell me more.
I've been self-funding. Mm-hmm. I self-funded this project and me and God are working it out, literally.
Yep.
But this is a big part of the bottleneck, right? With a lot of small businesses. I, Leslie, am fortunate enough to be able to do some of the things that I've been able to accomplish so far. But a lot of entrepreneurs can't do this.
No.
When you think about the capital that it takes to get something off the ground. And like, so I've been calling in a lot of favors, to be completely transparent. I call in because I have those connections because of what I've been doing and the work I've done already. I know tons of folks. So I call in favors. If I need something, I'm leaning on my network. And so I know that a lot of smaller businesses don't have this kind of a network. So what I'm doing is using my network to help me support whatever it is that we're, what I'm doing in this terms of this project, to help support these entrepreneurs too. So that's what a lot of this project is. I didn't get funded for this.
But is it something that you think about, or are you just going to leave this to be an organic process?
It's something that I think about. I think that it'll come down the road once we kind of get to the second location, because the second location is well on its way. I wanted to get the initial project off the ground and then go after money, because this is a new concept. And so it's a different concept, I should say, than what's already out there that exists.
Absolutely.
So I have solid proof of concept, and the recruiter in me is going, we got to build up our business resume so that when we.
Yes. That's
what I'm doing. And so it's just figuring out creative ways to kind of build the pieces and put the pieces in place that I would like. And so, and I do a lot of negotiation, to be transparent. I have a pretty robust team for somebody who's like self-funding.
Yeah.
And so it's me doing this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. This is Shades and Layers, and my guest today is Leslie Robeson, founder and CEO of The Black Beauty Collective, a new concept store for Black-owned beauty brands with a flagship location in Chicago. Leslie is on a mission to open 3 more stores countrywide in the USA, and she'll tell us more about her plans for Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and Los Angeles. In this next part of our conversation, she also talks about the benefits for the beauty brands that join the store and why it's a no-brainer to be part of this collective. The solution to all these challenges that Black entrepreneurs face is going to be education, access to resources, network, etc., and then the shelf space, of course, because you can't get into the big stores that easily.
That's right. Okay, so the game plan. So number one, the way that the model is structured is entrepreneurs actually pay a monthly shelf rental fee. That's the model. But they get 100% of their retail sales back. And so the way I've structured the business, my customer is actually the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur's customer is the consumer that purchases products from them. So my job is to create as many scenarios and opportunities to push sales for the entrepreneur. So that's what my goal is. So the more successful the entrepreneur is, the more successful I've been as the business owner.
Right.
And so what it looked like, we have the brick and mortar store. They're renting shelf space. Shelf space starts at $200 a month. So it's a reasonable rate for most small businesses where it's not too bad of a commitment. But just if you're in a store, you automatically get some baseline benefits, like you're automatically on an e-com website for no additional cost. I have a product photographer that'll be capturing all the products that'll be going up on an e-com, because I know entrepreneurs that are at different levels in their journey.
Yep.
May or may not have been able to afford it, they'll have access to those images for no additional cost. So I'm doing things like that to make sure we can help them begin to align their business with some of the assets that we're bringing into the space that I'm putting out there. So those are the first two. And then we're also going after different partnerships or sponsors for the Black Beauty Collective. So whatever resources. So the way I'm pushing sponsors isn't, I want you to partner with the Black Beauty Collective. It's like, sure, you can partner with the Black Beauty Collective, but how are you going to support these brands under the collective? We'll have 100+ Black women, largely entrepreneurs, that are part of this collective that are all small businesses. So how can we support all of these businesses? And so that's really the messaging that I'm going to be putting out there. So they'll have access to any kind of partnerships that we'll be able to acquire. So that's number one for the entrepreneurs, to be able to be a part of a bigger collective of folks so they can get more support. Our sales team is going to be an extension of their own individual sales team. So when I talk about the training that they'll be receiving, our sales team, we have an extension. So you have that as a support. That is huge, because most entrepreneurs are individuals.
Yeah.
And so doing our pop-ups and going into different cities, New Orleans or California, LA, we're going to these different cities with pop-ups. They are not having to send someone on behalf of their company. We'll be there with, I'll be there with the team to make sure we're selling and driving sales on their. So we can we'll become a leg of their business in that regard. We also have social media. I have a social media manager that'll be including these different brands into our social media calendar. Also, email marketing, same thing. We have a newsletter that'll go out weekly. We have targeted emails. These entrepreneurs will be included into that platform as well. So they're gaining access to a lot of different assets that into an audience that they wouldn't have otherwise had access to. So those are some of the things they'll get from a sales perspective. And one of the roles that I'm actually hired for that I'm probably most enthusiastic about is I'm bringing on a retail analyst. The job of our retail analyst will be to understand the sales projections of each individual business in that part of the collective. Mm-hmm. So then if there's a brand that isn't performing as well, we can then help them pull different levers. Let's talk about the sales. What kind of SMS should we be sending out? What kind of marketing should we send out? Should it be social media campaigns? Should we be running an email marketing campaign? How can we support and uplift this brand to make sure they're gaining visibility? And then they're also helping these brands forecast. And so we know as a small business, a lot of times we don't really have the bandwidth. We might not even know how to forecast. And so now you have someone teaching how to forecast, how to read reports, how to talk about your business from a data perspective. And so they're in real time gaining the resource of how to change the trajectory of how they're looking at their business. And so we're teaching them how to do these things in real time. So it's more of a blueprint.
Right.
And they're kind of being kind of immersed into a space where they're being asked, okay, this is how we should be thinking about. Let's not say, okay, on March 1st, I'm going to release a new product. But in December, I'm going to release a new product. This is what kind of marketing strategy I would like to have. And the other things that we'll be doing, we have monthly meetings. One of the speakers we're going to have come in, they're going to talk about if you can't afford PR, how do you write your own press release to still gain the visibility that you're looking for in your local news? I was actually speaking with a sister scientist the other day. She mixes a lot of products for different Black businesses, creates products. But we were talking about, when should you leverage a manufacturer if you're making products yourself? When should you use a manufacturer? At what point? So is it 1,000 units? Is it 100 units? At what point do you start looking externally as you grow your business? Or fulfillment centers, things of that nature. So my goal is to get owners of these companies in to just come and talk about some of the baseline things, because a lot of entrepreneurs don't need a 16-week crash course to have a target goal. If you say, hey, Leslie, 1,000, once you get to 1,000 units in a quarter, that's when you go manufacturing. Okay, noted. Yeah. I don't need 16 weeks.
For absolutely.
And so
absolutely.
Doing things like that to help support entrepreneurs just differently.
Yeah. So it's very, specific, it's targeted, and there's no meandering in trying to put it all together. because there's so much out there, hey, learn how to do this. I'm the expert on this and that.
It's so much that. And the reality is most people they're bright enough. Just tell me what I need to know so then I can go do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm thinking now, you've got competitors in the market, obviously. And, the first people that sprang to mind, apart from the fact that they don't stock small brands and also Black-owned brands, it's, people like Sephora, and then you've got Ulta. So how are you planning to stand out in that space? Because everybody's talking about the beauty space being crowded, which I don't believe. But anyway, so how do you plan on standing out and attracting a customer that's broader than the immediate customers that these brands have right now?
I think what's going to be the win for us is our customer service, to be 100% and making sure we're cognizant about ensuring we have a team that can help assist a diverse clientele, because that's probably the number one thing. I've been doing a lot of interviews lately, and I've heard a lot of feedback in terms of the lack of feeling of customer service and appreciation. And when you're shopping in these other spaces, I think our knowledge base, ensuring that the knowledge base is there, is something we have to be intentional about with the associates and the folks that we're bringing in to assist our customers. And then also the way that we're creating an experience for people to come into where they feel heard and seen and valued, and it's top of mind. And so, and then also doing surveys on the back end so that we're always improving, because we love feedback. Right. And I think doing things like that and being cognizant of it and making sure that the people that are coming in feel that way is individualized. Even if it's a lot of folks, how do you still create an experience where people feel seen and valued. And that's what I'm driving at the top of mind for all of the customers. It's going to be the customer service space. Sure. And of course, I mean, there are very few spaces out there that support exclusively Black brands. And so
absolutely,
we're standing out like a thumb because of that. But in my opinion, that's not enough. We need to drive the customer service part. And so I'm working diligently to make sure we're challenging some of the cultural components, because, you know, you hear Black businesses don't have great customer service and, you know, things like that.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's not because we have bad customer service. It's because we're solopreneurs and we don't have resources to hire a team to do some of the smaller tasks. And so when you're one person doing everything, a lot of times it is overwhelming. And so something is going to fall through the cracks. And a lot of times it's things like that. Mm-hmm. So really helping become that extra arm to really have a different level of customer service and just changing that narrative, because that's not true.
Yeah. So there's that side of the puzzle that you're solving, the customer side. And then, of course, there's the retail side. And I've heard quite a lot of small brands, you know, struggling to keep up with the demands of big retail, like, you know, Target and Whole Foods, etc. So what's your game plan on that side? Like, how are you going to be different on that side of the puzzle?
I think what I've found is, like, some of the brands, they're like literally going because of demands. It's like, I would bankrupt if I step into this space. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, it's impossible right now for me to keep up. So what we're planning to do, which is where that the ideal of going, you get 100% of your sales back, because it's really capital. Because if you don't have the capital and then somebody's cutting into the profit, or you're only doing wholesale, so you're not getting the difference and no one is really helping you drive sales, right? It becomes like a multi-layered system that really, it's not designed really to help you succeed. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what this project is creatively thinking about: how can I support the entrepreneur differently than the stuff that's out there? So that's why I'm talking about these different pop-ups and all these different things and them still getting 100% of their sales back. 100% of your sales back. So you can make sure you have the capital to put back into the business, to buy more products, to leverage some of the other pieces that you need to help continue to scale your business. And so as I talk to these entrepreneurs, I'm the front end of the business. I'll help drive sales. I'll do the marketing. I'll get out and I'll talk about the businesses. I'll do those things. Your job in the middle is to produce good customer service and produce the product. If you focus on that, I'll focus on this. I have an attorney that'll go after some additional resources in terms of capital and funding and placement leads to get them placed to other stores. So we're collaborating, and I've developed this team of folks that are all in place to help them succeed. And so if you focus just on what you do exceptionally well, which is make product, make widgets, whatever it is, if you focus on that part, I'll focus on this. I'll push you to sell more products. I'll kind of create. So that's what I'm doing to kind of solve that bottleneck a lot of us experience when it comes to if you scale too fast. Because that's, even though it's like, oh, great, you're a target, but if you can't keep up, it's not great.
Yeah.
So how do you incrementally help brands grow so it's not so overwhelming for them?
Exciting, exciting. And of course, you've got this ambition of having brick and mortar in different parts of the country. So tell me how that picture looks, and, you know, what's your ideal scenario over the next 3 years or so?
It's going to be amazing. So the big push behind this is actually to help these small brands scale into a national footprint.
Yeah.
That's number one. That's the
exactly. Yeah.
And so, of course, Hyde Park, Chicago is the flagship store. The second location, which is scheduled late fall, is Houston. Mm-hmm. We'll be down in Houston. And then D.C. and Atlanta. Those are the first four that are on the roadmap. We'll also be doing things like, and I talked about our short stint pop-ups like Essence and Austin during Afrotech, things like that. But we'll also be looking at doing like a month-long pop-up in like LA or a month-long pop-up in New York to test the market to see how the brand performs. Mm-hmm. And then if it's a good fit for that market, consider putting a new brick and mortar in those locations.
Nice.
So the goal is to continue to scale. And so if the buy-in is $200 a month and you have this particular shelf space as an entrepreneur, you're now in five stores for $1,000 and you're selling, you know, and so really to scale, just became obtainable just differently, right? If you're almost a business and I got a shea butter and I'm based in Newark and now I'm in 5 brick and mortars across the country and I'm spending $1,000 and I'm seeing the ROI, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Today's episode of Shades and Layers is a focus on the Black Beauty Collective, a recently launched concept store that is home to 40 plus Black-owned beauty brands. The entrepreneurs were recruited from different locations across the globe by founder and CEO Leslie Robeson, a Chicago-based talent acquisition specialist, part-time model and entrepreneur. Leslie also served in the U.S. military for 3 years and is now leveraging these professional experiences to make her latest project a success. Up next, she discusses the influential people in her life, the ones who shaped how she turned out. We also discuss her idea for a memoir and a biopic, and of course, her future plans and how you can join the collective as a beauty brand owner.
I'm looking to get through this grand opening, but the amount of impact and how fast it's moving is telling me that I'm in the right lane, right? Mm-hmm. I'm doing the things that is impactful to other people and I'm helping them. And so I'm ready. I'm ready for it. Okay. I've done some amazing work on a corporate front and I love my corporate job, don't get me wrong, but I can use more of my skill set to help support other people. And it's not just up the vertical of me supporting this corporation. But the narrative changes. I can use this skill set to help tons of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, you have another company, Luxury Linen. Tell me more.
It's called The Velvet Collection. Mm-hmm. It's a luxury linen rental company. And we do high-end linens. So for like your galas and your baby showers and your weddings, all linens for those events. So you think like velvets and heavy wovens and beading, anything that you find that's like, oh, I have to have this. This is gorgeous. It's those kinds of linens.
Okay.
And so that's what I've been doing the last couple of years.
Oh, fantastic. So you've got this entrepreneurial bug in you, which is why you're doing all this stuff. But, you know, you could have chosen any other line of business to go into. There are a lot of frustrating problems to solve out there. Why beauty specifically?
Because of my modeling background, I know that we're just underrepresented across the board. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about like going into some of these photo shoots and there's no one who's ever worked with my kind of hair before. And so I learned early on to always go get my hair done by my stylist first. And then all they have to do is if they don't want a center part, they can just move it over. Mm-hmm. And so I experienced it all too many times. I think the first time someone burned my hair out, it's just that lack of knowledge. Like it was overheated because I should have a curl when it's wet, but they straightened it so much, it stripped it. And so just experiencing those things and then knowing so many models that experienced it. So I have this level of passion for just in the beauty industry, the hair industry. And I mean, I grew up in a timeline where we were doing, I got the relaxers and I got pressed out when I was younger. Mm-hmm. Like my mom went to was a cosmetologist. Like, and so I grew up in that space. And my mother, my grandma got her hair done every week. She got a new finger set for her hair. My grandmother. But I grew up in that kind of a space anyway. Several family members are cosmetologists. And so I was already like just passionate about the hair and beauty industry in general. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that I had no visibility that it would show up like this again in my life, not in this way. And so, right when you say it's tons of problems to solve, but this is easy, like it's not easy, but
it's plug and play. You're familiar.
Absolutely. It's easily solvable.
Yeah.
Like, there's a couple brands that don't have enough visibility. Okay, let's get you some visibility. Like, I can do that.
Yeah. But you're also a veteran.
I am. I'm an Army vet.
Yeah.
Served 3 years in the Army.
Wow.
I was going into my junior year in college. I'm first generational college student. Mm-hmm. No one knew what I was experiencing in college, just being a poor college kid, long story short. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to join the Army. No one else in my family had joined the Army. I just decided to join. I served 3 years and it was probably one of the best decisions that I made as a young person.
Oh, yeah.
To just get structure, to get the experience that I needed, to get in and get out. I graduated undergrad a week before I got out of the Army. Served 3 years in and out.
Wow. Excellent. That's really, really amazing. So do you still volunteer?
I do not volunteer.
Okay.
Only thing I volunteer for is because, so I'll go back, like, as a recruiter and recruiting, I'll go back and I'll work with veterans how to transfer their military experience into a corporate resume, because that's probably the hardest.
And it works, yeah, yeah.
And so I do things like that a lot of times to help them gain opportunities in these corporate spaces.
Yeah. So you spoke about your mom and your grandma, and those are the influential people, clearly, in your life. Anybody else that has given you words of wisdom that you still live by at this time?
You know what? Someone when I was really young, because I grew up in especially as I became like an early teen, it became really non-traditional. I didn't stay with my mom anymore or parents. But someone told me early on that I was and I didn't see this in myself, but he said, you're a raven. You are always, or eagle, you always soar. He's like, you always figure out how to, and you'll take people with you. And I was like, maybe 15, 16 when this person said this to me. And I had no visibility into what that meant, but I know how that made me feel. I was like, oh, wow. You know, like this thing, like, okay, I'll always get it figured out. And so, and his name is Mr. Woods. It's one of my good friend's father, Mr. Larry Woods. But Mr. Woods is probably hands down one of the most inspirational people. And he's like a giver. Mm-hmm. He raises our children. He raised other children. He's like a dad to me, just this amazing human. And he speaks life into people. And I think that's where I probably pick it up from. Mm-hmm. Because I know that today you may not be there. You may not feel that, right? You may not be showing up that way for whatever reasons, because life happens. But that doesn't mean you can't aspire to do that tomorrow or in a couple of hours. You still have that as an opportunity. And he would always say it. He said it over the years. And he just spoke a sense of life and breath into me as a young person. And I've always kind of like kept that in the back of my mind. And then I do it with other people. And so it's just those moments that I think made a pivotal difference in my space for me to become like this human.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. So if you had to write your memoir, what would you call it and why?
Oh, my God. I would probably call it Life Is. And I say that because one thing I figured out because of my journey is, like, if I really like broke it down to you, it's such a non-traditional journey. And I've had a lot of failures and I've made a lot of mistakes and it was a lot of bumps in the road. But I've been able to rebound and I've been able to rewrite the story and I've been able to become an inspiration for other people. And I say life is because it's really exactly what you make it. Fill in the blank. You know what I mean? Like, fill in the blank. It could be this today, but it doesn't have to be that tomorrow. You have control to change it. You just have to, if you put one foot in front of the other long enough, you'll walk a journey. Like, if you do it long enough, right? You're going to go somewhere. So that's like the thing, like, life is fill in the blank. You got it. Like, you are the controller of it.
You're brilliant. So, I love it. Yeah.
That's my memoir. I guess it's not as deep, but I say that all the time. I say it all the time. If someone, we're in conversation, I'll be like, oh, it's okay. Life is, you know, it's okay. Whatever is happening. Is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good, good, good. And if you had to take that memoir and turn it into a biopic, who would be the lead actress?
Oh, my gosh. Why did Gabrielle Union come to mind? But she really is a person.
Because she's exciting and spicy.
She is. She was literally the first person, but I would never say that. Like, but she, as soon as you said it, I was like, Gabrielle Union, she's the one.
Great. So where can people find you?
Connect with us on at Black Beauty Collective, and that's spelled BLK, beautycollective.com, or on Instagram and Facebook, it's at Black Beauty Collective. And then you can probably connect with me, the Leslie Roberson. Where else are they supposed to find me?
I don't know. Where do you hang out, girl?
So where do we hang out? Right here at this desk, working all the time.
Fab. Then that's where they'll find you. They should just book a meeting with you then.
What's the time on my calendar? I'm actually interested in talking to people. I talk to you. You would be surprised at the number of people that put time on my calendar and they're just like, so I heard you were coming in Hyde Park. I don't have a product. I'm just interested in learning more. And what's so interesting, because I have this recruiting background, I'm like, sure, let's about it. So what do you do? Let's figure out how we can work together. I'm like that. I do actually have a couple people that work for me that's how they came on.
Yeah.
Because they were just being nosy. They were just interested.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
But that's how it works. Life is.
There
you go.
And that's the beautiful part about this project is I know it's a scalable project. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of visibility, mm-hmm. a lot of eyes on it. So my goal is to connect with as many professionals as possible to help support it, where we can get them some visibility too. So it's not just about supporting the BBC, but how can we leverage your skills to support us, and how can we support you too?
Brilliant. And that is all from me this time around. Thanks to Leslie for sharing her story. Thanks to you also for listening. If you liked what you heard, please share this episode with a friend. And remember to also subscribe to our newsletter. Details are available in the show notes. I'm Kutlwano Skhosana Richie. And until next time, please do take good care.